It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Since the one-term limit on the Pennsylvania governor's office was lifted in the 1960s, no incumbent governor of the Commonwealth has lost his bid for re-election, making the state capitol in Harrisburg a pretty good campaign address. But now, low approval ratings and an uneasy relationship with the press have combined to make Republican Tom Corbett the nation's most vulnerable governor facing re-election. So exactly what are Mr. Corbett's chances of winning re-election, and which Democrat has the best chance of unseating him? And would that necessarily be the same Democrat who has the best chance of winning next week's gubernatorial primary? Here to discuss those questions and more is Philadelphia Daily News columnist John Baer. John, good to have you with us.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Before we get into breaking down Governor Corbett's chances of winning re-election, why is he in such a vulnerable position in the first place, with the general election now less than a half a year away?
Well, I think it has more to do with his style almost than anything else. He came to office out of a career as a prosecutor, both as a U.S. attorney in Pittsburgh and, of course, as 8 years as the attorney general. He had even served as acting attorney general in an interim basis before being elected to the post. Prosecutors don't have to talk to the public. They only have to talk to secret grand juries and, in cases of trials, to sequester jurors. So his whole background was geared to putting together his case. Are you there?
Yeah, sorry about that, John. beg your pardon. A little
did
bit of
train just go through, Paul.
Well, we are in the south side, and the tracks do run behind our radio station along the river there. So that could have been.
That's a nice homey touch. I like that.
Yeah, that cleared out the sinuses, I think, maybe. At any rate, you were talking about how the governor did not necessarily have to address, worry about public relations.
Right. He spent the vast majority of a fairly distinguished career never having to deal en masse with the public. And I think that sort of attitude and training carried over into the governorship. He never made a strong case for what he was doing. He was doing exactly what he said he would do when he campaigned, and that was to cut the cost of government, not raise taxes, keep everything under control. And look, there's a lot of constituents in Pennsylvania that want that kind of leadership. The problem he has had is getting his own message across, that this is why I did this, this is how I did it, and this is why you elected me. In the interim, the other side, people who support the education community, for example, people who are worried about fracking, for example, have been very vocal and have been able to grab the narrative and make a case against this governor, both as an incumbent and as an incumbent facing re-election.
John, we seem to be having some difficulty with the phone line. Obviously, we're doing a live interview here, which is great, but it does sometimes put us in harm's way. So I'll tell you what we'll do is we're going to we should try to reconnect with you. And then we'll resume our conversation, okay?
Okay.
All righty. John Baer is a Philadelphia Daily News columnist joining us from Philadelphia to talk about the governor's race, particularly why Governor Corbett appears to be so vulnerable. He has been labeled as the most vulnerable sitting governor in the nation. The question is why? How has he ended up in that position? And what are his chances for winning re-election? And there are four Democrats who are vying for the Democratic nomination, and their outcome will be determined on Tuesday, the Democratic primary taking place among other primaries next Tuesday, and we'll know then who the single Democrat will be that will face Tom Corbett in November. And as those four candidates go up against each other, the battle has reached a fever pitch. And another question that we'll put out there to John is, as these Democrats start to attack the frontrunner, Tom Wolf, how much might that hurt the Democrats' chances of taking back the governor's office in November? We'll also ask you to weigh in on who you feel is the most effective of the four Democratic candidates. Which of the candidates impresses you and why? 412-246-2002 is the number to call to join the conversation with John Baer, who's back with us by phone from Philadelphia. Hello again, John.
Hey, let's try it again.
All right. Hopefully no trains will come running through and interrupting us this time. has the you know, there's one of the big issues, one of the causes that Tom Corbett has championed is this whole issue of voter ID. And with the recent court ruling, the governor has decided not to fight that. If anything, he'll go back to the legislature and try to rewrite that proposed law. Has the whole issue of voter ID backfired on him?
Sure. Because, again, the narrative was controlled by the people who opposed having that sort of a requirement in the state. And, again, the governor never made a strong case for it. And this goes back, Paul, the other thing that is critical to the governor's success or not success, he is really not a politician. If you go to any event that the governor is featured at, you won't see him work the room like most politicians do. He won't go table to table, say hello, even if it's a friendly crowd. And so a lot of the policies that he has espoused are not politically popular. He has espoused them because he truly believes they're the right thing to do. That's not how politics tends to work in a partisan state like Pennsylvania. It's commendable as a human trait to do the things that you actually believe should be done. But as a politician, it's just has not accrued to his benefit.
Governor Corbett has held causes that are popular with liberal voters, like legalizing marijuana. He's held them at arm's length, even though he's acquiesced a bit on this. Is the fact that it's not just left-of-center Democrats that are pushing for legalizing medical marijuana anymore, but voters of all political stripes, how much is that hurting him?
Well, as you suggest, he has eased up a little bit on that, as he has on a number of other areas. And I think all of those things combined, you know, you don't need a lot of reasons to dislike any politician. But if you provide a liberal or a left-leaning or an independent voter with a litany of reasons not to like you, then you get the kind of polling numbers that Governor Corbett has seen.
Now, in the meantime, there are indications, there are numbers out there, polls out there that would suggest that there is more than a hint of hope for the governor after all, in spite of what we've just discussed. A few weeks ago, you wrote a column stating that a recent Washington Post ABC News poll was providing hope for the governor. Explain what this poll revealed and how it relates to the governor.
Yeah, there really are three things, Paul, that can accrue to the governor's benefit. The one you mentioned right at the top, that the pattern in Pennsylvania has been an 8-year cycle. No incumbent governor since they were allowed to seek a second term in the 60s has ever lost. But there's a deeper pattern within that, and it goes the whole way back to the 1930s and Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And that pattern is this. In the last 19 elections for governor in Pennsylvania, taking this back to the 30s, only once has there been a governor, whether he's incumbent or not, in Pennsylvania, who was elected of the same party of who held the White House. Only once did that happen. In other words, if you're a Republican, you're going to be elected or reelected when there's a Democrat in the White House, as we have right now. The only time that didn't happen in Pennsylvania was in Dick Thornburg's reelection in the 80s when Ronald Reagan was president. And Dick Thornburg was wildly popular at the time and barely won reelection by an unknown underfunded candidate. So that sort of historic pattern, that 95-96% of the time pattern, is definitely in the governor's favor. We don't know where national politics will be come October. But if the president's numbers are down, if Congress's numbers are down, this is a midterm year. Voter turnout is always lower in a midterm year. So if people are unhappy with Democrats, period, Governor Corbett benefits from that.
And what we're seeing is that the President Obama's approval rating, recent polls show that it's at its lowest point of his incumbency. Some of the numbers we've seen, 41%. And that also, according to the Washington Post ABC News poll that you cited in your column at the end of April, voters prefer that Republicans run Congress. So, as you point out, while there are a million more registered Democrats in Pennsylvania, if Democratic turnout is low, that would seem to work to Governor Corbett's advantage.
Exactly, and there's one more element that is very close to that, and that is, There's a group out of Washington called the Voter Participation Center. It's a nonpartisan research group that studies voting patterns. They and the national pollster, Celinda Lake, did a study of what's out there in terms of women and minority and young voters. And what they found is disturbing to them, but again, potentially beneficial to the governor, that in a state like Pennsylvania, you could have in a midterm election, there could be a drop-off of as many as 900,000 voters who are unmarried women, minority, or younger eligible voters, because at the center of almost every poll is this total disgust and with government, period. And people who are in situations that a lot of unmarried women, a lot of minority, a lot of younger voters find, which is on the low end of the economic scale, unable to find or keep a job, underemployed or unemployed, they basically have given up on government and don't feel that their vote matters, don't feel that they can make a difference. If that pattern holds, and obviously Democrats think it won't, you could take away 900,000 votes from whoever the Democratic candidate is. Because, listen, Paul, I probably don't have to tell you, in Philadelphia, the voter turnout, first of all, voter turnout in gubernatorial elections in off years are never good in Pennsylvania. The last election in which Corbett was elected was only 40%. 24 states had higher turnout in their governor's races that year. In Philadelphia, it's even less, unless Ed Rendell's name is on the ballot, because Philadelphia is so city council and mayoral-centric. Harrisburg seems like Arizona to a lot of people that live in Philadelphia. So all of those things, it like every election, it depends who turns out. But in this election, it really, really is a big factor.
And also, as you point out, Governor Corbett could run hard on his no-tax, anti-quote-unquote Obamacare stances, and that could be, in the long run, beneficial to him, combined with a potential low turnout.
True. And the caveat on the other side is, look, either way, Tom Corbett is going to make history on election night in November. He is either going to be the first incumbent governor to ever lose an election in Pennsylvania, or he is going to be the statewide politician who came from the deepest hole in the history of polling in Pennsylvania. Many, many people, Paul, think that his numbers are so bad and that his image is embedded in people who actually vote that it is a very tough climb for Tom Corbett to win re-election.
So would you go so far as to say it, that it's the Democratic nominee's race to lose?
It sure feels like it at this point. And Democrats, as you know, are entirely capable of doing just that. but, you know, you cannot – look, it is impossible to poll this far out for any kind of turnout. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what the national atmosphere is going to be. You don't know how well – of a campaign either candidate runs. But if you put a gun to somebody's head today who's been following this stuff and say, who wins in the fall, the Democrat or the Republican, you'd have to say the Democrat.
We're talking with Philadelphia Daily News columnist John Baer about the Pennsylvania governor's race. Voters will go to the polls on Tuesday for the primary and choose among four Democratic candidates for governor who will face Governor Corbett in the general election in November. We'll take a closer look at the candidates in that race and how it is shaping up as we continue our conversation with John Baer. Stay tuned. It is Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and with just 5 days remaining before voters go to the polls, we're looking at the Democrats in the gubernatorial primary with Philadelphia Daily News columnist John Baer with us on the line from Philadelphia. We just talked about Governor Corbett's chances of winning re-election with polls showing that he is the most vulnerable governor in the nation who is running for re-election. So now it's time to turn our attention to the four people that are hoping to win the Democratic nomination, the right to oppose him in the general election in the fall. And John, polls indicate that if the primary were held today, Tom Wolf would be the Democratic nominee. Opponents like Rob McCord and Allison Schwartz have been attacking him, and we'll get into some of the nature of that. But could attacks on the front runner Wolf, assuming that the numbers hold and he does in fact win the primary on Tuesday, how much could that end up hurting the Democrats' chances of unseating Governor Corbett?
Well, I mean, it really depends, Paul. I mean, the polling since the attacks began haven't shown much movement. People are calling Tom Wolf a Teflon candidate because his numbers have not come down, despite a pretty good hit from both Rob McCord and Allison Schwartz. The Wall Street Journal wrote a piece this week that basically was hinged on that even though he's vulnerable, Governor Corbett could benefit from, you know, the beating that Tom Wolf has taken, and that could help attract national fundraising, particularly outside the state, if they see any weakness on the Democratic side. But I mean, the fact is that once you get into the summer and the late summer and early September, the race is going to be a referendum on the incumbency of Tom Corbett, not on the attacks that were taken on in the Democratic primary. That'll be distant history by then. So it's going to be up to the governor to try to control the narrative of the campaign and keep it away from himself and on Tom Wolf. The only thing that Democrats made sense in this time was the argument, and I think Rob McCord made it best. Look, we need to do this now, because if we don't, Republicans will do it in a much harsher tone come the fall. And the line that McCord uses was, we can't afford to have another untested Tom. So you could argue that Tom Wolf has truly been tested through this. It really remains to be seen whether or not that ultimately hurts him going forward.
Right. I was going to ask you, do you buy Mr. McCord's argument on that?
I buy the fact of it. I don't buy that that's the reason it was done.
Right.
But the result, yes, I think the result is accurate. But look, people running for office aren't running, to greater enhance their opponent's ability to carry forward. They're running to win the office that they're running for. So anytime you hear any candidate saying, well, I'm doing this for the good of the party or for the good of the nominee later, you got to take that with more than one grain of salt.
And what Rob McCord has been doing is he has been airing a number of negative ads against Tom Wolf and saying that he failed a leadership test on the issue of race. Explain, if you could, a lot of people may not have had time to sit down and read through or research the backstory on this. What exactly happened in 2001, in terms of what Rob McCord is accusing Tom Wolf of, and it relates back to another incident that occurred in 1969 in York, Pennsylvania. And I'll let you kind of paint the historical picture here, John.
Right. Well, in 1969, York had a horrible series of race riots, and during one of them, a white York policeman was killed. And shortly after, a young African-American woman who was visiting family from the South was killed. And at that time, there was a young police officer by the name of Robertson who was rumored to have been involved in helping to incite some of the riots in the black neighborhoods. Fast forward to 2001, and that former police officer is now running for his third term as mayor. Now, York is a very diverse town was than it is now. So presumably the first two times that Robertson won the mayoralty, he did it with at least some African-American support. So in 2001, he's running for a third term. Tom Wolf is the head of a civic group because he's always been very much involved in his community and is serving as his honorary campaign chairman. Right after Robertson wins the Democratic nomination for a third term, he is arrested in an ongoing investigation of the 1969 murder of the African-American woman. He's charged in connection with her murder, and Wolf is asked by the local press if he will continue to serve as his honorary chairman. And Wolf says, as long as he stays in the race, I'm the honorary chairman, I continue to be. That is what McCord has focused in on and said, that was a time that Tom Wolf, as a civic leader, should have stood up and said, we can't tolerate racism, on and on and on. But the fact is that he had been indicted, not convicted. He was later acquitted, talking about Robertson. And Wolf, we learned later, was instrumental in getting him to resign, to leave the ballot, resign from the race, going forward to defend himself in his trial. So on the surface, this looks like a very ugly story of a former racist cop who somehow became mayor of the city in which he was supposedly a racist, being backed by a civic leader who was interested in working with the mayor's office on redevelopment projects. The difficulty in applying it against the truth is that Tom Wolf has long been involved in the community of York. Tom Wolf employs many African Americans. You've seen them in his commercials. He has been very active in the Crispus Atticus efforts in York. Many African Americans have come forth to support him. He this week was endorsed by the Philadelphia Tribune, which bills itself as the voice of African American community in Philadelphia. He was endorsed by the first African-American mayor of York, Kim Bracey, who is the incumbent. He was just endorsed by Philadelphia State Senator Vincent Hughes, who's the longest-serving senator from Philadelphia, who was a former head of the Legislative Black Caucus. So you have like a mountain of support on one side. And if McCord's attacks had been genuine, if he really believed that it's an immoral imperative to talk about this and he wants to talk about race, this was a story that has been around for some time. It wasn't a story that broke 3 weeks before an election. McCord could have brought it forth then. And finally, Paul, if it had been a genuine effort, McCord was endorsed by the Black clergy of Philadelphia and vicinity, which is a very powerful political force in the African-American community in Philadelphia. They said nothing. He made his initial attack on this during an education forum debate at the Free Library in Philadelphia. If this was a real thing, I believe the next day the leaders of Black clergy of Philadelphia would have stood with McCord and backed him up. They did not. So, which leads me to believe this is solely political, solely intended to tear down Tom Wolf and build up Rob McCord. According to everything we've seen in polling, it absolutely backfired.
We are talking with John Baer. He is a Philadelphia Daily News columnist and talking about the Democratic race for governor and the attacks by Rob McCord on the frontrunner Tom Wolf. And John, you were at the debate, the last debate that was held earlier this week, and you had a chance to question Rob McCord about why he's running so many of these negative ads, what his motives are here. And I want to get to that. But before we do, let's hear Rob McCord in his own words recently discussing why he was raising this issue of race with regard to Tom Wolf. In a recent conversation, he talked about this. The conversation veered into this topic while he was answering questions from the Allegheny Front's Julie Grant. Let's listen to what Rob McCord had to say.
For me, the issue of how you confront issues of race and racism and racists is a leadership issue, and it ought to be discussed. And I would definitely say it was a painful choice for me. I think frequently raising race issues is difficult or challenging, but it's when you think it's the right thing to do, it's what you ought to do. And in my context, what happened was I challenged my friend Tom. I learned about this Charlie Robertson episode. And I was appalled to read for myself that Tom had apparently failed a leadership test. Think of the Donald Sterling situation and the NBA commissioner. They find out, they hear about the tape, they take 2 days to fact check, and the commissioner comes out and publicly says, this guy has to go. This billionaire owner has to go. Go back to 2001, not 1969, 2001, and you have a similar situation except much higher stakes. Nobody died at a Clippers game. You do not get up and say, I chaired this man's primary campaign, and if he asked me to, I'll chair his general election. You talk to him enough and say, it's 2001. We need to address this. So hearing about it, I said, listen, issues of race shape a lot of public policy, especially the way we invest or fail to invest in public education. Would you please talk straightforwardly about what you were thinking that night 13 years ago? And I think in a way that probably was sadly overcoached by campaign consultant and ad buyer types. He said, oh, come on, Rob, we've moved on. And he sort of said, we went through harsh times, we're not going to talk about it. And it's like, well, no, it's actually very much on our mind how you manage these gut checks, these leadership challenges. And I think when you're selecting somebody to be the governor of the state, you need to be thinking about judgment calls.
And again, that was Rob McCord, Democratic candidate for governor, and talking about his opponent, the front runner, Tom Wolf, on the issue of race, and some pretty cynical comments there, especially as he's comparing it to the Donald Sterling incident. John, as you listen to that, John Baer of the Philadelphia Daily News, what is your reaction to hearing that particular comparison?
Well, he did the same thing, Paul, when he first brought this up again at the at an education forum in Philadelphia, and my initial reaction was, well, no, wait a second. I mean, Donald Sterling was caught making racist remarks himself, and it was Donald Sterling's effective boss, the NBA commissioner, who slapped him for it. No one caught Tom Wolf making any racist remarks, and at the time that the issue was in Tom Wolf's face, he was not in a position of authority over the mayor of York. He was not a public official. He was not running or seeking office. And what he did, or what he says he did, was rather than be a public person out there trying to get attention, he quietly worked for 2 or 3 days with others to get Charlie Robertson to resign from the mayor's race. To me, that sort of makes sense. I can see, because, I mean, race is such a toxic issue in politics, I can understand why you would try to use it in a political campaign. And look, Rob McCord is married to an African-American woman. As a matter of disclosure, I know her. I love her. She's a former colleague. She met Rob at Harvard. She worked at the Philadelphia Daily News with me. She worked at the Washington Post. She's a wonderful person. Because of that long-time relationship, Rob McCord probably has a better handle on race relations, more experience with race issues than most white people anywhere. So, I mean, I give him some slack in that. But to use this issue and to repeatedly use it after former Governor Rendell, current Senator Casey said, look, it's over the top, pull back, I just think it's over-the-top politics. There isn't any indication that Tom Wolf has any affinity for the kinds of beliefs that Charlie Robertson may have held as a young man, says he held as a young man.
And you had a chance to ask Rob McCord at the debate earlier this week, or the candidates forum as it was billed, why he's running so many negative ads against Tom Wolf. What did he say?
Well, that's when he said about, you know, we have to be tested. We can't let somebody go forward without being tested, and every candidate should be tested. And look, the Wolf campaign complains that the latter end of the race has centered on these attacks, that nobody is going after anything having to do with Rob McCord's background, with Alison Schwartz's background, with Katie McGinty's background, and that's completely understandable because those three people are essentially out of the picture. If any of them were the front runner, I guarantee you there would be a lot more focus on them. But McCord has made his bed politically. As I said earlier, I think it was a critical mistake for this campaign and perhaps for his career going forward.
And so in the meantime, Alison Schwartz has also run some negative ads against Tom Wolf. And you have Katie McGinty, who has chosen not to do anything to paint any of the other candidates in a negative light. By taking the high road, is there any chance that this could pay off for someone like Katie McGinty?
I think it definitely pays off in the long run. The latest poll out of Franklin and Marshall shows her getting a little bump, particularly in approval rating, as it shows McCord's unfavorable ratings going up significantly because of the attacks, I assume. Katie McGinty is a terrific candidate. Democrats were both blessed and cursed this season by having four candidates, any one of whom is equipped and capable to be governor of Pennsylvania, any one of whom would give the a genuine race against his reelection. And the problem was only one had the resources. If you change the math in this race, if Tom Wolf only had $5 million of his own money to spend and the playing field is virtually equal among the others, we'd be looking at a very different outcome. We'd be looking at a very tight race. And money makes a big difference. There's no question about it. And people like Katie McGinty, I think Katie's going to have a future if she wants it in either elective or appointed politics. I think McCord, not so much. And I think Allison, I don't know where she goes after this. If everybody votes who says they're going to vote come next Tuesday, and if the polling turns out to be accurate.
We are over time for the segment. So before we go, John, a quick prediction. Who's going to win on Tuesday?
Again, if the polling's accurate, if people who are telling pollsters that they're going to vote, then Tom Wolf wins. It probably won't be by the bigger numbers that you're seeing because other candidates have probably better ground games. But Tom Wolf should win comfortably.
Philadelphia Daily News columnist John Baer joining us from Philadelphia. John, it's been a very enjoyable conversation. As always, thanks for sharing your insights with us on Essential
Pittsburgh.
Thanks
for having me.
Coming up, we will go to amusement parks and check out the roller coasters with travel correspondent Elaine LaBalme. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.